House Special Fisheries Committee to order on March 31st, 2009. Like to welcome everyone, and at the table we have Representative Munoz, Representative Book, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Representative Edgman. The time is approximately 10:25, and as always, we'd remind everyone to turn their cell phones off. Today's business will be to hear two bills, the first being Senate Bill 3, which is the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission as an information resource. And the second item on the agenda today will be House Bill 46, which is the Mixing Zones Bill. And it'll be the Chair's intent to hear the bill today and to hold it for hearings later on. And we will have online with House Bill 46, the Division of Water Director Lynn Kent, as well as Assistant Attorney General Cam Leonard. And I'd like to welcome Representative Johnston to the table. Thank you for being here. And with that, not hearing anything from committee members to start the meeting off, we'd welcome Senator Olson's staff, Tim Benny, to the table, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Tim Benintendi, staff to Senator Olson, who, by the way, apologizes for not being able to make the meeting here this morning. Senate Bill 3, fairly short bill, but has a real targeted objective. It would simply provide a benefit to the state's economic development corporations, the ARDRs, by allowing them to obtain public information from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission at no cost. That's the heart of the bill, the one-paragraph bill. By emphasizing public information, we would include the reminder that no confidential information would be made available. It's simply whatever's available to the public now would be provided to the ARDRs at no cost. The objective is to kind of help with their modest budgets, and the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission supports the bill and says that the loss of revenue is basically minor, and it's not a concern to them. And with that, it's got a zero fiscal note. We've identified no opposition, and I'll just see if there's any questions.
Thanks, Tim. Questions? Representative Johnston?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and excuse my ignorance, but can you tell me how many are the number or who the regional organization that qualify under this bill? Just kind of give me a list if you've got them.
I forget the total number. I think it's up around 18 or 20. We've identified eight that are obviously heavy in the seafood industry, and they'd probably be more the target. Perhaps Mr. Frank Holman can develop that further, but it would help with their planning, anticipating economic trends and things like that. So, but all of them could take advantage.
Follow-up, Representative Johnston.
Thank you. And this would include, when you say regional development organizations, is that like Fairbanks Economic Development, Juneau Economic Development Council, as well as some of the rural?
Through the chair, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Additional questions for the bill sponsor, staff, Representative Munoz? Tim, one question on my end would be just to ask why this have to be put in the statute in order to provide the service, a service that I presume is already basically being provided to the ARDRs?
I understand from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Mr. Chairman, that yes, they are providing free service now in large measure, not universally, but agencies are mandated to charge for certain services, for example, public documents. And so even though the cart might be coming in front of the horse on this one, they want to make sure that they're doing everything by the book, and so yes, we need to address it in statute, not regulation.
Well, for the committee's edification, both Tim and I were staffers when this bill to create the ARDRs program. I think it was Senator Sturzelewski's bill back in '92 or '93, somewhere back then, and the ARDRs have always gotten a small amount of money from the state of Alaska. I think it started out at $50,000. This year it's about $58,000. And some ARDRs are more successful than the others in terms of raising private sector funds or funds from contributing organizations. And this bill, although not maybe significant in terms of the overall revenue picture for some of these arteries, for a smaller arter, I'm thinking of the arter on the Kuskokwim, for example, Carl Berger's shop, this bill like this could probably have meaningful impact for them as well. So if there are any more questions from the committee, Tim, we'd thank you and ask Mr. Homa to come to the table and offer any comments that you might have.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Holman. I'm the chairman of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and we're here to lend our support to Senate Bill 3. We don't consider that it's a significant revenue loss to us, and it is helping some worthy organizations. We just wanted to reemphasize for the record that there's no confidential information that would be disclosed because of this bill. We're still governed by the statutes AS 1605-815. That any information from fish tickets, any individual's information from fish tickets, is still held in confidence. So basically what the bill does is, as Tim has explained, is just to remove the charge for the data preparation. And it's we do this because we're required to charge for services to the public. But if I could follow up on your comments, Mr. Chairman, at the time that the orders were passed, I was a staff to Senator Sturgeolowski, so it's coming around again here. So we've been very supportive of the organizations, and I believe this is correct that there are now a dozen arters around the state, and about eight of them are considered coastal areas. So,
okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll end here unless there are questions.
Okay. Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Holman, you mentioned a couple of examples of the kinds of inquiries you might receive as to data. Could you give us just examples of other kinds of requests you might get?
Before you answer that, Mr. Homan, I'd like to have the record reflect that Representative Millett has joined the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Book, generally what the kinds of information that we're requested have to do with the regions, and these are regional groups, so the data on how many fish were caught in the region, how much money was generated, how many people participated, employment, and stuff like that, have to be tailored to the region. And so it takes a little bit of analyst time to tailor that data. We have it on a statewide basis, but when the arters generally ask for the information, it's specific to their area, so we have to do some analyzing to get it to come out in that proper form.
Follow-up, Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Holman, do you contribute to the state website any information so that the general populace can get an idea of what it is that you do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Book, yes, we have a very significant website that we maintain that has fisheries data for every community where a fish was landed or a permit was issued. So it's quite extensive from a statewide point of view. It takes a little more effort to narrow it down to a specific region.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get that on the record for the public.
Thank you, Representative Book. Any additional questions from committee members for Mr. Holman? Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have anyone who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 3 online? It appears that we do not. Is there anyone here in the audience who wants to testify on Senate Bill 3? Not hearing any. Anybody come forward? We'll close public testimony and turn to committee discussion on Senate Bill 3.
I'm going to make a motion to move it. I may move that we make a motion, we move SB 3 out of committee with zero fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and that's 26LS0018 Alpha.
Is there an objection? Not hearing any, the bill will be moved from committee, and we'll stand down for a minute or two to sign the corresponding document. And next, turn to House Bill 46. And if we'd ask the bill sponsor to come before the committee and identify himself for the name, the record, affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Paul Seaton. I represent District 35, which is Homer Seward and a large area on the west side of Cook Inlet. House Bill 46 is a compilation of three things that are involving mixing zones. And for a little bit of background, in the previous administration, there was a change. There's always been a prohibition of mixing zones. Well, not always, but for years and years, there's been a prohibition of having a pollution mixing zone in a spawning area. And those spawning areas were defined as the area where you have anadromous fish, or whether you have a place where there are reds. And the definition of a red is a nest. So a broadcast spawning fish, one that just releases eggs out into the water, the prohibition didn't previously apply to, and if we went back to that, the definition we have in here, it wouldn't apply to a broadcast spawner as well. But most of the freshwater fish, the subsistence reliance fish, as well as salmon, they all basically dig in gravel, put eggs in an area, or build a nest. And so as far as the areas we're talking about in this bill, as far as spawning areas, that's what we're concerned about. There was also a change that was just done administratively in the previous administration or just before that, that change the definition of spawning area from the normal definition of known as, hey, this is an area or a place, to a place and a time. And this was done by the department without the public notice. It was done in the Fairbanks area first, and then just gradually applied to other places in the state. And so there was this idea of a temporal spawning area. In other words, as long as the fish weren't laying eggs at the time, it wasn't a spawning area. It was only when they were actually spawning. And that's very problematic because, you know, the eggs are very delicate while they're being raised and those kind of things. So there have been these two changes that have taken place over the history in our state. And what this bill attempts to do on not allowing pollution mixing zones in spawning areas is to take us back to the pre-Murkowski days, when this was the law of the land that said you could not have a pollution mixing zone in a spawning area. And so essentially people need to understand what a mixing zone is. A mixing zone is an area of the water body which is allowed to be polluted above the state limits. In other words, we establish water quality limits, and there's a discharge, and you have to meet that discharge unless DEC gives you a permit for a mixing zone, which says how big an area in the freshwater body, because we're talking about freshwater in this bill, can the standards be exceeded. And then you measure at the outside of that area, and that area can be quite varying. In some areas, in some zones, they can be a mile long from the point of discharge before the point at which you measure the concentration. And so within that area, you're exceeding the water quality standards of the state of Alaska. So that's what a mixing zone is. Oftentimes there's this confusion, but it's an area in which we allow the water quality standards to be exceeded. And so this bill does two things. First of all, it, or three things. First of all, it takes the spawning areas, like I was just talking about. It also is a public right to know bill. Right now, we give a lot of mixing zone permits, and there's a concentration known and reported DEC, but the public has no real way of translating that and saying, well, how much of a material is being dumped out in a year? And so all this does is say on new permits, we will require them to not only do the concentration and the volume, but they'll have to report the estimated amount of material. So let's say we had copper. You could have a concentration that is above the water quality standard, and it could be out of a 2-inch pipe or it could be out of a 4-foot diameter pipe. So we don't have that good way of knowing, well, are we dumping, you know, tenths of pounds over a year, or are we dumping tons into the water body? So that's what we try to get to. Again, what this bill does is says on new permits or renewal permits, the permittee would be required to report those things, just like they're required to report other things. In this case, it would be on a spreadsheet, and they would just be required to say what is the estimated total amount of each of the contaminants that they're permitted to discharge, what is going into the water body each year. And then the third part of this bill says that if there's a sewage lagoon that's permitted, and I'll get to amendment in a minute, because what has been meant is a commercially operated sewage lagoon. In other words, you have somebody going around and commercially picking up septic discharges from homes, and they're permitted to have a disposal area. If they increase that area by over 50%, then the public gets to comment on it. Right now we have a situation in which, in my district, and you have a fair amount of documentation on that, where there was a sewage disposal area that was 1,500 gallons a day, and then over time, 20 years later, they increase it to 6,000 gallons a day. And you know, the residents around there have no right to comment, there's no notice, they just administratively change the permit. And so what we're trying to do is say, sure, you can reissue the permit and with some expansion, but if you're going to grow it over 50%, then you just need to have public comment. And so what we're trying to do is protect the public in three areas on this. First of all, the one I just described, if you're a neighbor and somebody is expanding their operation larger than 50% of the initially permitted amount, then you have a right to make a public comment on it. The other thing is, as I said, you know, the public has a right to know the total quantities of contaminants that are going out into our mixing zones. And the third thing is, again, what I talked about earlier, is restricting to the pre-Murkowski days, the same language that we had. And actually, we put some qualifiers in there that make it easier for a number of people to continue to operate, but would not allow mixing zones within spawning areas. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd just like to talk a little bit about the bill. First of all, I mean, it's fairly short. The first part, again, is the information that's collected by the department. And you'll see at the bottom of page one, again, this is a, when they grant a permit or other authorization for a mixing zone, they'll require the report, but they won't have to quantify temperature, acidity, alkalinity, or dissolved oxygen. You know, the DEC, and have, you know, we've consulted with them, and they said that those are difficult parameters to quantify, and that's not what we're trying to get at anyway under these. We're trying to get at the total amount of contaminants that are put out into the water. The second provision of the bill you'll see is simply exactly the same language as it used to be. Anadromous fish or resident fish reds located four, and then there's a number of species that are listed. So you know, some people have said, well, gee, it might be, we're talking about sticklebacks. Well, they're not listed on this list. So this list has been in statute for a long time. And that's, but it's only if they have the resident nets. And so the second amendment is actually on page 3, where we're talking about the sewage treatment plant here. Notwithstanding a permittee that seeks to modify the permit or authorization, that's where it is, that First Amendment, R.1, where commercially operated sewage treatment plant. There was no intention here to mean a public or, you know, an individual's or anything. It was just a drafting error that left out that information. And so, Mr. Chairman, I guess the other thing to do, I would like to note on the fiscal note, if you have that there, it's somewhat confusing since we specifically drew this up so that it wouldn't have to apply to broad basically all the permits that are in existence. None of those permits would it apply to until they came in for a reissuance of a permit or a modification of a permit. And at that time, they would just receive the instructions of what they have to report. We would presume that DEC would do this on a simple spreadsheet with the calculations, and they could easily post it on their website. So why they have decided to list this as if it's going to be a, you know, one permanent part-time environmental specialist and having conducting travel costs and workshops when this isn't going to be something we're going to have to go around and supervise. This is simply when people come in for a permit, it would be a new part of the permit. So over time, it's about it's a five-year cycle that they use for water quality permits. So as all the permits come on board, then this information would be available to the public. So I guess that's probably, unless you have other questions, I presume you'll have other questions, Mr. Chairman, but that's basically where the bill is.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. And just for the committee's understanding, the amendments before us are offered sort of conceptually, and we will take them up at the next time that we hear this bill so that you as committee members have a chance to read them and understand them in their entirety.
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, I did forget one. Can I add it? And that is an amendment, and it's just adding a definition of useful life. We had a comment from DEC that they weren't sure which of the many statutory references to useful life would be applied to the bill. So we have the definition here. Useful life means an anticipated time in which a facility can continue to be operated without replacement or major renovation. So there was some question because there's a number of statutory references, and so these are really pretty technical kind of fixes to the bill.
Okay. Questions, committee members? Representative Millett,
I do. Representative Seaton, on spawning areas, before a permit is granted, does DEC or does Fish and Game go and review the area for spawning grounds and make that determination of what are spawning grounds and what are not?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Millett, on anadromous fish, the department does have a registry. They also, when there's a mixing zone permit, they are consulted. And that's the purpose of their consultation, is to look and see what is there, or to require the person that is requesting the permit to provide certain information. So as far as salmon goes, there is the anadromous stream catalog that they, you know, are continuously going on and identifying. The other parts of it are that there are requirements that you have to identify when you're applying for a permit, what's in the area, and those kind of things.
Okay. Follow up, Representative Millett?
No, that's good. Thanks.
Representative Buch and Munoz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a follow-up to that question, I was wondering if Representative Seaton, are these catalogs, as you mentioned, are they upgraded? Do they get enhanced as time goes on, as requirements change, as some of the steps change for regarding the government's requirements?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Book, yes, the anonymous catalogs are updated as reports come in. My understanding is that they don't go out and try to do an all-Alaska survey every year or something, but they do upgrade the anonymous stream designations, and in fact, when people are applying for permits, often that comes through. One thing that was incorporated in this bill was to make sure that we've had a situation in the past, Valdez is a very good example, where they had a wastewater treatment plant and they had a canal going from the treatment plant for the overflow water that went out to marine waters. This does not cover marine waters. This is freshwater only. And of course, there's a lot of pink salmon around Valdez, and those pink salmon invaded the canal that was dug out. And so all of a sudden, you've got Fish and Game saying, you can't use this anymore, but you can't cut off the flow because then you... And so what we incorporated in this bill is something, especially for other mines like Fort Knox that have settling ponds. So if you have an artificially constructed pond or channel, and it becomes later invaded by a fish species, that cannot be declared a spawning area. Okay, so this is helping the mining industry. I mean, you know, if you have a fish species that would invade Fort Knox settling ponds, all of a sudden, can you no longer use the settling ponds? Because it's, so this bill gets around that by saying, you artificially create a pond or ditch or channel, that artificial pond, ditch, or channel cannot later be classified as a spawning area, even if fish go in there and spawn. So that some of the questions we've been trying to get around and help the industry.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. According to the information, they're currently authorized in law. Mixing zones for seafood processors, placer mines, oil and gas related facilities, large mines, fertilizer plants, etc. Mm-hmm. How many businesses or municipal entities would be affected by this legislation?
Well, through the chair, Representative Munoz, first of all, this has a grandfather clause in it, so that anything that got invaded after the permit and was issued would be just like the artificial designated pond, so an artificially constructed pond or channel, so they wouldn't be reclassified as a spawning area. I mean, fish do move around, and so we wanted to make sure that that was not the case. And the third amendment that you'll see in there is to make sure that we didn't have an unintended consequence. It's on page 3, line 5. And that is at the, we submitted a lot of questions to DEC, and they had one question that even though we're exempting these public or private wastewater facility or system, where it was later involved, there was a question, there are some in villages that were not permitted, were not authorized, but they were in use. And so this language here, inserting or for an area where spawning was ongoing at the time of initial authorization, if that authorization occurred more than 5 years prior to the effective date of the bill, is to take care of those situations.
Do you know, you don't know then how many affected parties we're talking about?
Through the chair, are you talking about just the one provision on spawning areas, or are you talking about all three areas?
Right, that would currently be affected. I realize you say that they would be grandfathered in, but permits have a life, and so they would have to reapply, and then they would fall under the provisions of this law. So I want to know how many businesses are we talking about here, or municipal entities?
Could I bring my staffer up?
Through the chair, my name is Louis Flora, staff to Representative Seaton. And it is my understanding that currently the DEC regulations that have authorized for the spawning area allowance, which we're trying to correct with this legislation, have not been yet certified by the EPA. And DEC can come online to correct that if that's wrong. But so currently, there's my understanding is there would be no businesses affected by this change as of yet. I mean, if this were to go into effect and modify the law saying they could not have a mixing zone and a spawning area, there's no one that's currently in line to get one, or potentially there are, but they haven't been granted a permit yet. And then there is that paperwork that you've in the under the DEC paperwork here that describes the amount of mixing zones that are currently authorized, and there might be an update to that the department can provide. That's from 2006. A number of those listed in that paperwork are for saltwater, and this applies only to fresh water.
Follow-up, Representative Munoz?
Maybe for the department, if we...
For the department. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And a couple of things. Recalling that what we are doing is going back to the language that existed pre the previous governor. And every mine in the state was permitted under these conditions. There haven't been any that have been permitted. Well, there's been one. But almost none of the mining operations in the state have been permitted under the, what are sometimes said, streamlined or loosened regulations. So that these were the regulations that have been existing when the actual permits for the mines in the state of Alaska have been there, and they've all been able to work around them. The one that had a problem, and I think you've got it in there, was Pogo, and they wanted a wastewater discharge permit in a salmon stream, and they had to move it up to an area where it was rockier and more boulders, and so that it wasn't a spawning area. And so they had to put in, I forget how much, several hundred feet of pipe to move it out of a spawning area into an area where there was not a spawning area because of the configuration of the rockiness of the area. So, you know, it all comes down to the question of, do we want to put criteria in that will make sure that we protect our renewable resources? There's nothing in here that should prevent any kind of a operation going forward that actually does things right. There's nothing in there that would prevent any operation if it meets the water quality standards of the state of Alaska. If you have a pipe running into a stream that meets the water quality standards, it's perfectly okay to discharge it. The only time that a mixing zone is required is if what you're putting into the stream does not meet the water quality standards. And then it gives you how far downstream are you going to be able to have this area of water that doesn't meet the water quality standards of the state of Alaska. And so what we're simply saying is when DEC gives those permits for not meeting our water quality standards can't be in a spawning area.
Yeah. Follow up, Representative Munoz.
Okay, well, with the example, let's say the Nooshigak River up in Bryson's district, there are dischargers, fish processing facilities, and that's a major spawning area, of course. How would they be affected?
Well, let me just clarify that where the seafood processors are is the saltwater portion, and I think this bill addresses the freshwater portion. So I think that would be the short, simple response.
Yes, and remember, it's a spawning area, not where they migrate through. Just for clarity, you know that there was an initiative that was certified. It didn't go forward. It had almost the same language as the bill that you have before you. Except that they changed the definition of spawning area to be anywhere that fish spawned, reared, or migrated through. And that initiative would have had tremendous repercussions because we wouldn't be looking at just containing and making sure we don't pollute a spawning area, we would have been saying you couldn't have a mixing zone basically in any of the waters of the state of Alaska. And for clarity, I had no, I mean, even though the language was almost taken right out of the bill except for that very big change, I had no part in that. I never saw it until it was certified and was out. So I just wanted to clarify that for everybody.
Representative Seaton, how many mixing zones do we currently have in spawning waters? Do you know how many permits actually have been issued right now for spawning habitat?
Representative Millett, through the chair, we have a list. This is Louis Flora, staff to Representative Seaton. In former iterations of the bill, we did have some material on placer mines that were authorized for spawning areas with timing restrictions. And I do not have that. I can provide that to you. It might be more appropriate for the department to update its materials on this, but it was from last year, and it's not in the packet currently. We do have 59 placer mines operating under a general permit with site-specific freshwater mixing zones, but whether or not those are authorized for spawning areas, they would have to break that out. We do include in this version of the bill a blanket exemption for placer mine turbidity mixing zones, and that had been a major bone of contention with previous versions of the bill. And so we wanted to take that off the table, say that we're protecting the mom and pop and all the placer mine operations with this bill by allowing them to have a turbidity mixing zone with the, as long as the department is okay with that in consultation with Fish and Game.
So, in follow-up, so placer mines are exempt, so you trust that DEC can recognize a spawning area for placer mines, and so this would exempt placer mines from the spawning areas, I guess, is that?
Through the chair, this is Louis, Rep. Seaton, staff, for turbidity mixing zones.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, may I clarify, just so everybody that's listening understands that placer miners, there's several different kinds of them. Most of the permits are small placer miners using a suction dredge or something, and turbidity is a measurement of the light penetration through the water. And often turbidity has been used as a substitute for arsenic because there's naturally occurring arsenic in many areas. So they use turbidity, but you're not putting anything into the water, you're just stirring up the water. And so what we've done here is just exempt the turbidity requirement. Now, of course, if Fish and Game and DEC find that there's going to be a placer mine that's going to be putting out so much silt that it's going to bury a spawning grounds, Fish and Game would object to the permit under those conditions. But we're exempting them by statute from the turbidity requirement. So I just want to clarify that it doesn't mean that Fish and Game, if you're going to have something that buries, just by putting out so much. But these guys aren't trying to do anything bad. Most of the time, even though some of the turbidity zones are, I think the longest one is a mile and a quarter long, but it's not used most of the time. Most of the time, they have a settling pond. They're large operations, using big equipment. Even though it's placer mined, it's not working in the water, it's working, onshore. And then what happens is you could have a storm event which would kind of wash out some of its settling pond. And so, the intention here is to protect on an ongoing basis the environment that raises our sustainable resources, but not to come in and put an unreasonable restriction on the mining industry. And so that's why we've exempted turbidity for the placer miners. Again, they're not putting out anything into the water. I mean, if they'd have an oil leak or something, oil spill, that's totally different. That's not something they're getting permitted for anyway. So the permit is simply for turbidity.
Follow up, Representative Millett.
I guess my question to you, Representative Seaton, is are we not protecting our spawning beds now? Is DEC not doing something that they should be doing? Are our spawning beds, do you feel our spawning beds are not being protected? I guess I'm trying to understand. I haven't heard of any spawning bed that has been ruined or failed or, you know, spawning areas move from time to time based on habitat of fish. And so my question is DEC not accomplishing levels of sustainability with our spawning areas currently?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, the things that have happened so far are that EPA, as my staff said, has not codified or approved the regulations to implement the ability of DEC to grant pollution mixing zones in spawning areas. So those haven't really been taking place yet. This is a proactive step to go back to the regulations that we had and the statutory authority that we had when all the mines, big mines in Alaska, were permitted. And it didn't stop any of those from happening. The problem is when we give statutory authority to say you can have a mixing zone in a spawning area, there are other general things that say you're not supposed to degrade a spawning area and those kind of things. But the question is whether we want to, as a legislative body, say we need to protect these things and we want to have, we know that if we're allowing mixing zones in spawning areas, it's not a good policy. And we want you to move those things to areas where there isn't spawning taking place, or we want you to clean up the water before you discharge it if you want to discharge it into a spawning area. So currently, we are not looking at saying that there are spawning areas destroyed, and currently they are not authorizing major mixing zones in spawning areas in the freshwater parts of the state.
Additional questions, Representative Millett?
No, thank you.
Representative Munoz, do you have a question? Other committee members for the bill, sponsor, and staff? Not hearing any at this time. Representative Seaton, we would certainly invite you to sit at the table if you wanted to. And next, we would turn to Department's representative, Department of Environmental Conservation. Lynn, are you online? Lynn Kent, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Good morning. Did you want to offer testimony on the bill?
Yes, sir, I would like to. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Kent. I'm the director for the Division of Water at Department of Environmental Conservation. I also have online Cameron Leonard with the AG's office if we have questions about any specifics of the either the existing laws or the bill as it's proposed. I do appreciate the opportunity to provide some input to you this morning on HB 46. I do have to start out by saying we're a bit confused about the reasons for the legislation or the problems that the bill is intended to solve. We're really not aware of any water quality damage or, any concerns with the existing policy or with the department's existing regulations that are designed to protect water quality. We have in place a very rigorous permitting program right now that includes water quality monitoring and reporting. Many of the provisions in the bill seem to us to duplicate protections that are already in place, and I'll just provide a couple examples there. The first is that our regulations already prohibit mixing zones in anadromous salmon spawning areas. That's a special protection that's been in DEC's regulations since 1975 and remains in our regulations. Another example is that the requirement in Section 3 of the bill for public noticing specific permit modifications for domestic wastewater discharges actually duplicates current state law at AS 4603.110 and also in our regulations at 18 AAC 15. These laws already require public notice for permits and also public notice for any significant permit modifications. And what's a little bit different from HB 46 is that the existing law applies to all of the permitted facilities, not just the domestic wastewater or sewage facilities. So we already have a requirement to public notice significant changes to permits. In our view, the details of protecting water quality really ought to be left to the agencies, where we can look at very site-specific issues, the conditions associated with a discharge and the water body, where we can consult with the biologists at Fish and Game and make those decisions based on sound science. We already have a duty under state statute to set and enforce standards for prevention of pollution and for protection of Alaska's environment, including water quality. And the legislature has also directed us in past statutes under AS 4603070, and I'll just quote this one, to determine what qualities and properties of water indicate a polluted condition, actually or potentially deleterious, harmful, detrimental, or injurious to aquatic life or their growth and propagation. We think it's entirely appropriate that the legislature hold us accountable for setting and enforcing standards for water quality. However, HB 46 seems to delve into some very specific types of facilities, very specific permittee monitoring and reporting requirements, and even into specific contaminants. Finally, we don't believe that the new data collection and reporting requirements in the bill, that the bill places on permittees, really provides important value. The bill requires permittees to collect new data, including the amount of pollutant, and to submit a new annual report to the department. Just by way of background, for most pollutants, our water quality standards, which are set in regulation, are based on a concentration of the pollutant that can be present in the water body without having an adverse impact on fish or other aquatic life. The wastewater discharge permit limits in the permits that we issue are also generally expressed as a concentration of the pollutant in the discharge. And that data is already required to be collected by the permittee, reported to DEC, and is available to the public. And this is very important because it's the concentration of the contaminant in the water body that has the potential effect on fish or other aquatic life. It's really not the pounds or the amount of a pollutant discharged. So we are thinking that this new permitting requirement for reporting on amount of pollution doesn't provide a valuable information to the public because it can't be compared with any regulatory standard, and it really can't be used to determine if there's any impact or potential impact on aquatic life. There is a fiscal impact associated with HB 46. DEC will need to revise our regulations to implement the new permittee reporting requirements. We will definitely have to upgrade our permit data system, and then we will also on an ongoing basis have to produce a new annual report for posting on the web. And I am certainly available for questions from the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Kent. Questions, committee members? Representative Keller, did you have a question?
Oh.
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, I had a couple. First of all, isn't it true that the provisions of not discharging, not having a mixing zone in a spawning area was in place for many years, and in fact that was the statutory language under which most permits for mining operations and even municipal wastewater operations in Alaska occurred?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, DEC's old regulations as well as our current regulations prohibit mixing zones in salmon spawning areas. There is one exception to that, and it's similar to the exception in HB 46, where a facility that has had a permitted discharge that later becomes a spawning area where the fish move into that area can retain its authorized mixing zone so long as it meets all of our other permit conditions for mixing zones. Our old and our current regulations continue to prohibit mixing zones in spawning areas for other listed fish, the same fish that are listed in Representative Seaton's bill. But in those cases, there are a couple exceptions to that prohibition. One is, again, for a mixing zone that is authorized when there are no fish spawning and fish later move into the area. And another exemption from that prohibition, if you will, is if the substance to be discharged is something that doesn't have an effect on aquatic life.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And I appreciate you adopting that language after we had the earlier bill. That was helpful. I had a question. I guess the response is that the existing language that we're going back to as far as mixing zones in resident fish population, their spawning areas, was the language that was there previous to the Murkowski administration. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the language is very similar to language that was in the regulations, in our old regulations as well as in our new regulations. What's different about HB 46 is that it defines spawning area in a way that is very different from longstanding practice by Department of Fish and Game, Habitat Division, both when they've been at Department of Fish and Game and when they've been at Natural Resources, where they have, for as far back as I can remember and have been working with them, defined spawning areas to include a temporal aspect. So when Fish and Game is evaluating projects that might have an impact on a water body, they often are looking at, from a construction project or any other kind of a project that might have an impact, they're often looking at the times when spawning is occurring. So it's been longstanding practices. We have looked at the potential for mixing zones in spawning areas. We consult with the Department of Fish and Game and the habitat biologists, and we look at whether or not for certain kinds of discharges that can be intermittent, is there a window of opportunity when we can authorize a mixing zone to be discharged in a way to avoid spawning areas and spawning times, and in a way that has no impact on present or future spawning. And we have, under our old regulations that prohibit mixing zones in spawning areas, authorized permits that have timing restrictions that avoid the spawning times and avoid impacts to spawning incubation and rearing.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I just going to another question here about the public process and public notice. Lynn, I think you're in receipt. It was copied to you by Renee Evans, and this was to Louis Flora, my staffer, and copied to you on October 23rd, 2007, and I'm quoting, the public process occurs at the time the state permit is first issued. The public notice is not required to administratively continue a permit or renew or amend the permit. The process for renewing a permit is found in Regulation 18. AAC 15100C below, and under that, under D, it's an application for renewal of a permit or amendment of a permit or variance will be treated in the same manner as the initial application, except that public notice or hearing will not be provided for applications for renewal or amendment. Are you saying that that is no longer the existing regulations under which you're operating?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, I may refer over to our attorney here, Cameron Leonard, who is familiar with the statutes and the regulations, but I will point you to 18 AAC 15100, and C of that regulation is, this section deals with permit limitations, and part of that says that any expansion, modification, or other change in a facility process or operation which might result in an increase in emissions or discharges or might cause other detrimental environmental impacts from the permittee's facility requires a new permit or variance. And when we interpret that, that new permit is something that obviously has to go through a new public review process under Section D of those regs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's interesting because we've shared with you and the department all of these problems that have occurred from this expansion by DEC's permit number 0023-DB016 and a file over the years, and your department has specifically sent us this email saying that there will be no hearing on the application for renewal or amendment, and citing that D section in bold italics. And so if you are now going to have a different procedure, that would be fine, but that's not what your department has been utilizing when you've had all these numerous objections from people for the expansion of a sewage lagoon from 1,500 to 6,000 gallons a day.
Did you get that, Lynn?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I heard what Representative Seaton was saying. I haven't looked into the specifics of this particular facility. I just printed the information off right before the hearing. It is possible that a facility has increased its volume in a discharge under a general permit, and we have not made it to public notice on the renewal of that permit, but I don't know about this particular facility. Generally, it's our practice that if there's a significant change in the discharge, that permit would go back out to public notice when it's reissued.
Representative Seaton?
Oh, thanks. That would be great to have some communication on that. I mean, we've had a lot of communication with the department on all these public comments and public objections that have been going back a number of years, and there has not, and they keep, there's been a couple of expansions of the permit without public notice, and the public public notice has been denied. So I think that's why we apparently need it in statute if they're, you know, if it's not going to be, it's not going to happen. So, thanks. That was my question on that.
Response, Ms. Kent.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Just one point here, and I can work with Representative Seaton on this, but it's possible he may be referring to a general permit that has an upper limit on the amount of discharge, and a facility that gets covered under the general permit with a smaller discharge that subsequently increases its volume but still is within the requirements of that general permit or the limit on that general permit. And I could see how that type of a facility could increase its discharge, still be covered under the same permit conditions, and not have a separate public notice during the life of the general permit. Once the general permit is renewed, of course, it would go back out to public comment, and that's on a 5-year rotation basis.
Lynn, I have a question. A moment ago, you talked about, in reference to Representative Seaton's question about the differences pre-Murkowski era to where we are today, and that House Bill 46 defines spawning area in a different way than the Division of Habitat would normally defines it, and it includes the temporal aspect being one of the big differences, which includes timing. But can you speak to, in terms of allowing a mixing zone through your department in a spawning area, what the normal circumstances for development would be? Are we talking placer mining? Are we talking Title 16 type activity? I don't think we're talking major developmental activity, but can you speak to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I can. When we go to permit a facility, the facility has to submit an application to us, of course, and they're required to tell us if they think that their discharge may be in a spawning area. We, of course, don't rely just on the permittee's claim there. If there's a chance that the discharge is going to be into a freshwater spawning area, we provide the application and the permit information over to Fish and Game and seek their input. One of the first places, of course, we go to is our catalog of anadromous streams, but we don't rely on that either because it doesn't cover every water body in the state. So our practice is to go to the biologists in the habitat division and have them take a look at it and provide information to us on whether or not it's a spawning area, i.e. a physical location of spawning, and then also provide us information on times when it's a spawning incubation or rearing area, such that if it's a discharge that can be made intermittently to avoid spawning, incubation, and rearing, we may still be able to permit that facility under our current law. If there is no window of opportunity there when you can't have a discharge time to avoid spawning or time to avoid impact on future spawning, then they don't get a permit from us.
So to ask my question maybe in a little bit different way, Representative Seaton said that with the exception of the Pogo mine, all the major mines have been permitted under, again, the pre-Murkowski era. And so I'm just wondering what type of development activity today that would enable mixing zones to take place in spawning areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Placer mines are an important one that we have used timing restrictions on to avoid spawning. We do have sewage lagoons throughout the state that retain the water for most of the year and have an annual or an occasional discharge, and those are often timed to avoid impacts on spawning. And there are a couple others, things like drinking water systems that have filter backwash that discharge occasionally. Those can also be timed to avoid spawning and impacts on future spawning. So there's a handful of types of facilities that have relied in the past on timing restrictions. Now, of course, not all discharges can do that. Many discharges are continuous, and the mines have largely been able to be permitted because they are discharging to areas that are not spawning areas.
I think the question was asked of Representative Seaton and his staff earlier as well about the number of mixing zones, and just the committee is just trying to get some sense of what type of activity are we talking about today, and what the occurrence level might be of the issuance of permits for mixing zones in spawning areas. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We our database right now doesn't have a specific field where we can search for mixing zones, but when we did a look by hand the old-fashioned way in 2006, there were about 450 mixing zones authorized in the state. Remember, many of those are to marine waters, and this bill wouldn't have any impact on those at all. They cover facilities, oil and gas, seafood processing, mining, construction, timber. Those are the main ones.
How about the Pebble Mine? Are there any mixing zones at this time?
No, Mr. Chairman, Pebble Mine is still in the exploration phase, and there are no wastewater discharge permits except perhaps with the field camps that are for domestic wastewater.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Kent or Mr. Leonard? We're online. Representative Book?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ma'am, you mentioned in particular the instance that was referred to by Representative Seaton as to whether or not that met the qualifications of a general permit. I was wondering if the members of the committee could get a report regarding how that fell within the purview of that permit and your perspective. So I would like to find out if, in fact, the references in this package actually are to one instance in particular, and whether or not the compliance of the department was through oversight or exception, or whether or not this particular instance did indeed fall within your purview, or what happened there.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for the department staff online? Not hearing any. Are there anybody, is there anybody else online who wishes to testify on House Bill 46?
I'm calling in from Anchorage.
Yes, can you, is this Kimbrough Mountie?
Yes.
Yes, can you identify yourself for the record and your affiliation, please, and begin your testimony?
Yes, thank you. My name is Kimbrough Mooney, and thanks to the committee for hearing the bill and to Seaton and Guerra for sponsoring it. I'm an AmeriCorps volunteer working at the Alaska Center for the Environment through November, And primarily, I'm an Alaskan citizen concerned about the quality of our fresh waters and concerned about the permitting agency's ability to stop detrimental practices. I'm here to speak in favor of the bill, and I have just a few main points. First, just like we have great police protection from criminals and agencies like the Volcanic Observatory and the Avalanche Centers to help keep us safe, I think we need agencies to be strict and serious about protecting spawning grounds specifically and freshwater habitats in general. As Senator Seaton said, or Representative Seaton said, this proactive bill would help secure for the future our fish populations. I think factoring in time of spawning seems very dangerous right now, considering climate change's potential to alter life cycle patterns. And it sounds like the agencies need more coordination on exactly what spawning grounds are and where they are, and this bill just would help make that protection stronger. Secondly, I work on a small cruising vessel in Southeast in the summer, and I have a degree in oceanography from Duke University, and I've seen these creatures from salmon, eagles, the wildflowers, and the skunk cabbage along freshwater streams, and I know their fragility. Their fragility to contaminants. Tourists recognize and appreciate these animals and their habitats too, and this bill will help the tourist industry indirectly by preserving the habitat of these freshwater species. Two more points. In response to a question of how many businesses will be affected, I don't think that matters if it's zero or thousands of businesses, because these businesses would benefit from learning more about their effect on their local environment. They'd have to pay more attention to their discharges, perhaps. And if this bill encourages businesses to be innovative with new conservation technology or discharge cleaning technology of some sort, well, then all the better. And then finally, I beg you to protect fish spawning grounds and migration routes, for that matter, whenever you can. As Stephen said, this has been done in the past. There's been better verbiage for protection. We all want to see Alaskan fish species prosper for obvious reasons, and you guys have the power to protect their habitat. So please just really consider this bill and the agency's commitment to keeping the fish populations stable and prospering, and really just away from keeping them safe from future threat of loopholes in certain legislations and certain documents that are already in place. Thank you so much for your time and listening to my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony, Kimbrough. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify on House Bill 46 today? Next, we would go to the audience here in Juneau. Is there anybody here in person who wishes to testify on House Bill 46? Apparently, there isn't. It'll be the chair's ruling to keep public testimony open, knowing that this bill will come before the committee again. Is there any committee discussion or comments at this time?
Not at this point.
Not hearing any. We'll adjourn the Fisheries Committee at 11:38.